Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Catholic Singles. Every day, hundreds of Catholic singles join CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love. Breadbox Media listeners get 20% off by using the promo code BREADBOX when they register. Come be our next success story at CatholicSingles.com. Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Welcome to Know the Faith, Defend the Faith. My name is William Hemsworth, and thank you very much for joining me for this week's episode. I'm pleased to introduce my guest at this time. She is the author of Discovering the Feminine Genius, Every Woman's Journey, The Body Reveals God, A Guided Study of Pope John Paul II's Theology of the Body, When Life Doesn't Go Your Way, and a contributor to Freedom, 12 Lives Transformed by Theology of the Body. She's the principal educator of John Paul II Resource Center of the Diocese of Phoenix and has been speaking on theology of the body for 22 years. My guest at this time is Katrina Zeno. Katrina, how are you today?
I'm fabulous, William. How are you?
I am great. Thank you for coming on. Oh, I know you're right down the street in Phoenix.
I know. Yeah. Yes. I mean, in a matter of speaking, right? It is kind of down the street.
Some miles, but yeah, down I-10.
It's true.
Yeah, but thanks for coming on today. I really appreciate it. We appreciate expertise to talk about this great teaching on theology of the body. So thanks again. So what is theology of the body? I guess what would be a good summary for those out there familiar?
Yeah, a good summary of theology of the body. First of all, I have it. So if people want to just see what it looks like, right? So this is the actual book itself, and its formal title is Man and Woman, He Created Them. But John Paul II uses the phrase theology of the body about 100 times in the actual text. And so it's obvious that that's his working, you know, title. So that's why almost no one calls it like, oh, I speak on man and woman, he created them. That's not what people say. They say, oh, I speak on theology of the body, or, you know, have you read theology of the body? And again, it's because that's his working title. And I think it's a very good one, because right off the bat, it tells us that John Paul II's project is that he wants to look at how we as embodied human persons image, or I like to say reveal God. So as you mentioned, one of the titles of one of my books is, I have it here, so, because visuals are always helpful, is The Body Reveals God. And that's because that's what I like to say in a short phrase, like a bullet point. Theology of the body means the body reveals God. And so John Paul II spent 133 Wednesday audiences while he was Pope. So he began in 1979. So you may remember he was elected in 1978. So less than about 1 year later, he started giving these talks. It's a catechesis at his Wednesday audiences. And people didn't really know, you know, what was going on, because that's kind of an unusual way to use the Wednesday audiences, is to give an ongoing catechesis. And so that's what he started in September of 1979. And then it got interrupted a couple times. One of the times was when he was shot on May 13th in 1981. And so that, you know, was a bit of a hiatus. And then there were other times that those Wednesday audiences were interrupted for other things. So it actually ended up being over 5 years. So he finished in November of 1984. So, but those were collected, and Pauline Books and Media published it then in the book that I showed you. So if we're talking about it as a literary work, that's what it is. It's 133 Wednesday audiences given in Rome from 1979 to 1984. But if we want to know what is the content, like what is the theme of it, it's exactly this idea that our bodies reveal image God, not generically, but precisely as being a man or being a woman. Now, you have to remember, he's writing this in the mid-70s when that wasn't an issue. I mean, to me, it's so amazing how even more critical and contemporary theology of the body is now, given everything that we are currently facing and what's emerged really just over the last 3-4 years and even more. You know, you can extend it maybe 10, 12. So really, I mean, in my opinion, even though I realize I'm a bit biased, like this is the issue of our time. What does it mean to be embodied? And is our identity connected in any way to our body? Or is our body just more kind of like a machine or more like something external to who we are and therefore isn't really connected with our deeply seated identity?
Well, at the time you started doing this, the sexual revolution was kind of at the forefront. It had been going on for some time. Do you think that was maybe, I don't know, the launch influence? A big influence on what was going on?
I mean, I think obviously it had an influence, but remember that John Paul II is writing during communism and being, because he started this before he was elected Pope. That's a really important thing to realize is that as the story goes, I mean, well, I'll only be able to confirm it fully, you know, in heaven, God willing. But as the story goes, he was working on the manuscript and had it basically finished when he was called to Rome for the conclave to elect a successor to John Paul I, who at the time we didn't know he was the first, but right to Pope John Paul. And so he had a finished manuscript. He was doing the final edits and he was going to publish it as an academic work because his previous academic work is called Love and Responsibility. And it is his philosophical reflections on human love. And how can we understand human love and particularly marital love as something that is beautiful and is something that's good and not something that uses another person? Because the problem had been over the course of centuries, how do we understand the fact that in the sexual embrace, there's pleasure? And we all know that wherever pleasure gets involved, the temptation can be to seek something solely for the pleasure and to want more and more and more of it. And so he wanted to address this really deep and difficult issue of, is it possible to enter into the marital embrace without using another and for pleasure to actually be a good that doesn't lead to use? So that's Love and Responsibility. And so this is a follow-up. That's philosophical. This is a follow-up. It's a theology, right? So it's his theological reflections then on, again, embodiment. And because of our embodiment, then the fullness of our embodiment is expressed through the marital embrace, expressed through the sexual one flesh union. So now, what does that mean theologically? So that's his goal. And what we have to remember is that he was writing under communism. And so he's writing under the experience of watching both communism and Nazism totally shred the dignity of the human person, totally ignore any philosophical or religious dignity and any theological understanding to the human person. So completely reducing the human person to an object. So I think that's very important because we don't want to reduce the motivation for theology of the body merely to the sexual revolution of the 60s. It goes much, much, much deeper than that.
So is it realizing that everyone is made in the image of God and deserves that dignity, that respect, something along those lines?
Yes, I would say that that is really, if you want to take what is the foundational layer of theology of the body. So what's the bedrock? It is absolutely Genesis 1:27. God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. But what John Paul II does that is a little bit different, and so this is where we're starting to get a development of doctrine. And, you know, I think it's kind of rare when one realizes that you're living in a time of development of doctrine, but we are. I mean, like, we're in a really privileged time. And part of that development of doctrine has been a development of understanding God as a Trinitarian communion of persons. And so what John Paul II's theology of the body is anchored in, and it's anchored in the fact that we're made in the image and likeness of a Trinitarian God. And most of us, when we hear that phrase, oh, image and likeness of God, it's kind of a throwaway phrase. Yeah, you're made in the image and likeness of God. Right. And when most people hear God, they think the old man with a long white beard, right? So, you know, exactly. I always say as a woman, like, that doesn't really help me know who I am, you know, to think, okay, I'm made in the image of God. I'm made in the image of a long old man with a long white beard. You know, it's irrelevant. John Paul II, in a number of his other writings, develops this idea of being made in the image and likeness as male or female of a Trinitarian God. And so that's what theology of the body is. It's the fact that our bodies image or reveal God as Trinity. And that's why, okay, I love to dance tango. Anyone who knows me knows that. And there's a saying in tango. Everybody knows it. What is it? It takes
how takes many? To the tango.
That's it. That's what everybody knows that. And so I like to say that and say, you know what? The same is true of imaging God. It takes two to image God. So why is this a development of doctrine? Because Thomas Aquinas, who is a fantastic and unbelievably unsurpassed theologian, he anchored image of God in the fact that we are rational beings, so that we have an intellect and a will, a free will, or freedom. And it's absolutely true. But if you think about it, if that was the only way we image God, then it would only take one to image God. Because as an individual with my intellect and my free will, I can image God in his intellect and free will. So John Paul II is building on that. And he's saying that is absolutely true. And God is in addition to being intellect and will, God in his very nature, because he's a Trinity, is a communion of persons. And therefore, that's why it's not good that Adam was alone. I would say it's not because he needed someone to cook and clean and care for the kids. Like, he couldn't do it by himself. It's that he couldn't live in communion with a giraffe, with a zebra, with a koala bear. You know, there's not another person like him. And so John Paul II brings this element of communion, and the way he does it is through this phrase, gift of self, this idea that we're created in the image and likeness of a God who is a Trinity. The inner life of the Trinity is total gift of self and love. And therefore, only once you have man and woman who are made of the same human nature, but expressed in two ways, radically different in their embodiment, the structure of their body, that now we have the possibility for a total gift of self in love. And that's the way our embodiment, not just as an individual, but as two, as man and woman, that's the way we can be an icon. We can be, you know, a living, walking billboard of the Trinitarian God.
That's interesting. I know a moment ago, we talked about Genesis 1:27. Does it go back to creation as well? How man and woman are created so differently. They come together in that communion and yes. Participate in creation in a way.
Yes, absolutely. So John Paul II spends a lot of time. So theology of the body in terms of its structure, if we think about the Bible, how the Bible has two halves, you know, and then the Old Testament, the New Testament, and in the Old Testament, We have the Pentateuch, the first, five books of the Bible. We have the Psalms. We have the historical books. We have the wisdom books. So we know that they're different, the prophets. So we know we have different books within that first half. And likewise, in the second half, we also have different books. We have the Gospels and we have the letters of St. Paul and then the universal letters. We can do something similar with theology of the body. It also has two halves. The first half, John Paul II calls the words of Christ. And the second half he entitles the sacrament. And each of those halves have three parts, or I like to call them panels, because it's kind of, you can think of like three panels or think of a trilogy, whatever works for you. And the first panel is God's original plan. So who we were created by God in the beginning. And then the second panel is what happens as a result of original sin, and then how we're redeemed in Christ. And then the third panel is our life in eternity. So what's our perfection in our heavenly state? So that's the first half. And so in that, the very first panel, he spends a great deal of time in Genesis 1 and 2. As a matter of fact, that's where he spends most of his time, because from Genesis 1, we understand that we're made in God's image and likeness. But then in Genesis 2, that's where we get the fact that Adam is alone. See, if we only have Genesis 1, we don't get this whole story about Adam by himself not being adequate. And so he works extensively, particularly with Genesis 2:23, where Adam says, this at last is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. This one shall be called woman, for out of man this one has been taken. Because it tells us, he has this very particular phrase that's often misunderstood. He calls it the unity of the two. And when people hear unity of the two, they usually think that means the marital embrace, right? The two come together, unity. Right. It's not what he means. Unity of the two is a technical term for him. And unity of the two means that we share the same nature. So the unity is the unity of human nature. And the two is the fact that this one human nature is embodied, expressed in two ways, as male and female. But it means that you and I, we share the same human nature. But you express it as a man and I express it as a woman. And because there's this fundamental unity of our nature, that's why then we can come together in a one flesh union. Because our human nature is created for this this other kind of unity, right? This marital or conjugal unity. So he reflects quite a bit on Genesis 2:23, and then it's followed by Genesis 2:24. This is why man shall leave his father and mother and unite to his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. So he really, what a lot of people don't realize is theology of the body in some ways is one big long Bible study. Because he just moves from scripture to scriptures to scripture, pulling out new insights, because he's working from God as a Trinitarian communion of persons. He's working from a very foundational text from Vatican II that says man cannot fully find himself except through a sincere gift of himself. And so the central idea to theology of the body is the fact that it is that we as embodied persons are made for a gift of self. In love, and that the most profound way that's expressed is described by Genesis 2:24 through the sexual one flesh union. And what's so important is to see that's part of God's original plan. That because unfortunately, in the early church fathers, as they're trying to understand Christ, I'm so happy I wasn't alive in the early church, because I probably would have been a heretic. Yeah, because
I agree.
You have the title of the show, Know the Faith, Defend the Faith. Well, they were trying to know the faith, to defend the faith, but they were still trying to understand what's the implication of the fact that God became flesh, became embodied. Like, is he just, all the early heresies about about Christ, is he God just using a human body? Is he really like the highest human and not really divine? So too, we had a kind of a similar struggle with understanding, again, marriage and the one flesh union in the early church. And there were some people who proposed that Well, before the fall, there was no marital union, that was a result of the fall. Because they're trying to figure out, well, what was the original sin? And so some people identified it with sexuality and with, unfortunately, the one flesh union, the marital embrace. But John Paul II is very clear. Genesis 2:24 is in the beginning. It's part of God's original plan. And so this is embedded in the very structure of who we are and why we're embodied only and always as male or female, because the one flesh union is the most profound way we make a total gift of self in love. And that, in a manner of speaking, images the inner life of the Trinity as total gift of self in love. So it's very tied in to Genesis 1 and 2.
So do you think that's maybe, you know, a lot of people ask, why am I here? What's the meaning of life?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So do you think theology of the body would answer that question then?
I think theology of the body answers that question in a massive way. Like if you, as a matter of fact, like I remember watching a few months ago, there was a little educational video about how deep the ocean was. And basically they've said, we haven't been able, we don't know. Right. Because there are parts of the ocean we have yet to find the bottom to, if I remember correctly. I think we could say the same thing about theology of the body. That because its fundamental project is to reflect on how human persons are made in the image and likeness of a Trinitarian God, and therefore John Paul II will say sacramentally represent the Trinity here on earth. Well, that's a cavernous mystery on both accounts, both on God as a Trinitarian mystery of love and the human person. John Paul II says every human person is a mystery. I mean, I will never know you fully. You will never know your wife fully. She will never know you fully. On the one hand, we could say, oh, that's disastrous. On the other hand, we can say, that's fantastic. Yeah. Because it means no matter how many years you were married, there's always more. And I was very blessed. I came into a deep personal relationship with Christ at age 16. And let's just say, like, I'm approaching a pretty big birthday at some time in the future that has a 6 and a 0 in it. Okay. So that means, you know, I've been walking with the Lord for well over 40 years. Oh my gosh. There's just always more. And that always more has to do with who is God and therefore who am I? Because I'm made in the image and likeness of a Trinitarian God. And I think the call of theology of the body is to kind of redirect us back to spending more time on who God is as Trinity. Because the more we plumb the depth of that mystery, the more clues we will get as to who we are and why we're created the way we are, why we're male and female, why the one flesh union. I mean, like, God could have created the generation of children any way he wanted. Like, I'd like to say, like, when someone sneezes, achoo, oh my gosh, a child, achoo, achoo, well, twins. You know, I mean, like, he didn't have to make the one flesh union, the marital act, be the way that children are generated. And yet he did. That's profound, and it has a theological meaning to it. I think only when we shift the emphasis from only just rationality and will to Trinitarian communion of persons that are a total gift of self and love that is fruitful, now we have a new path to understand who am I. So this is really great news for people who are single, like me, because a lot of people's impression is that theology of the body only applies to married people. Right. And I'm like, well, who here is made in the image and likeness of a Trinitarian God, right? Would you please raise your hands? Well, that's everyone. So even if they're three, even if they're just a little embryo, a tiny human person in their mother's womb, theology of the body is already applying because that child is already a gift. You see, so from the moment of conception, theology of the body applies to us as embodied persons. And so I think that that's what's the marvel, is when you shift theology of the body away from, okay, this is the church's best teaching on sexual morality because it's responding to the sexual revolution, to this is the church's next attempt at explaining the identity of the human person, because we're delving deeper into God as a Trinitarian mystery. Now we have something new that not only to explore within the church, but to offer society and culture.
Right. And I think that's a big misunderstanding, is that it only applies to sex. I fell into that camp once upon a time.
Yeah. So tell me why. Yeah, why did you have that impression? Where did you glean that from?
Well, I'm a convert, and so I became a Catholic while I was in Protestant seminary.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we talked about morality, that's kind of how it was presented. It's like the Catholic Church is, you know, so intertwined, so worried about sex that they came up with this theology of the body.
Seriously?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Now, thankfully, there were a lot of other students who called the professor to task on this. He was like, no, that's not right whatsoever. And so it got me thinking about it, and I started reading about it a little bit. So realized that what I was being told was totally wrong. And it's just more about who we are, how we relate to each other, how we relate to God, how we're created in God's image, how we relate to one another. And it's much more than, quote unquote, the Catholic Church trying to get into our bedrooms.
I think that's true, but what we always have to remember about the bedroom is that it's two persons made in God's image and likeness who enter into the bedroom. And so I think that again, that's kind of the element that's been skipped over, is that we have to first understand who we are, again, as embodied persons, as male or female, and that our embodiment, our personal embodiment, is blessed be God, what we take into the bedroom and what we express through a total gift of self in love, you know, in the marital embrace. And I think that's part of the problem of what we're actually facing culturally. I never thought about it quite this way, but that in a way we've been guilty of something similar in the church, in the sense that we have cut off morality from embodiment. We've just simply said, these are the rules. If you follow the rules, you'll be safe. You know, God won't be mad at you and you'll get to heaven. And so we've not really seen that the rules, or really what we could say our moral goodness, is actually tied to the shape and the structure of our bodies. Because the shape and our structure of our body is tied intimately to our nature. Like, how do you know what something is? I have a thing here. How do you know what this thing is? Well, you have to look at its shape, at its structure. Right. And then you have to see what it does. Oh, it goes on the arm, and then she looks at it. And when she looks at it, it tells her something. Well, it tells me what time it is. It's a watch. And so based on its structure, on its nature, that's how we know how to relate to something. And I think many times in Christianity, and that's a whole other podcast, like how we got to that place, but we separated moral goodness from the shape and structure of our human nature. And really, we can put it very simply. Part of how that happened is just in the history of Western philosophy. We used to talk about natural rights. Like, that was originally how political philosophy usually talked about rights, were natural rights. And then we began speaking about human rights. And now we speak about individual rights. And what that means is we have disconnected our rights from our embodiment, from our human nature. Because it's not based on human nature. It's just based on an isolated individual exercising his or her freedom of choice. That has nothing to do with nature and has nothing to do with being in a broader community, which is what natural rights indicated, is that we're all part of this natural system that's interrelated. And so I think that, and so as a result, even in the church, we've kind of adopted this attitude, well, we do what the church says, because that's what the church says. And what theology of the body does is, again, it anchors this in what I like to call a Trinitarian anthropology. So who the human person is based on being the image and likeness of a Trinitarian God for a total gift of self and love. Now that begins to tell me even as a single person, like, oh, what's good for me? What's good for my nature? What will help me flourish? And what will distort? What will twist? What will impede my full flourishing? And I think, again, just to connect it, that's what our culture has forgotten in the fact that our being man or woman, the structure of our body reveals something about our human nature and how we should and shouldn't act.
So I know we're just barely touching the surface on everything here, but where do you see theology of the body mm-hmm. applying not only today, but in the future ahead?
Mm-hmm.
I know we touched on it briefly, but
yeah, I think that I'm trying to see if I come up with an analogy. Okay, you know how you have those kind of Russian nesting dolls where, you know, you take one out and there's another and there's another and there's another. I that's the way I think of theology of the body, is that it has this profound depth and potential to it. Okay, I know how to answer your question. Is it, I think it has the potential to actually enrich and kind of reframe the whole way we do theology and the whole way we understand salvation. So I think it can, again, kind of like how St. Thomas brought about a whole kind of renewal of theology and our understanding of the human person and of God. Theology of the body has the potential to do the same thing, because what we've not touched on, but maybe we can in the future, is the reality that everything in theology of the body evolves around what John Paul II calls the spousal meaning of the body. And therefore, he also uses that same understanding for salvation. That because the word became flesh, that means God also became incarnate in a body that has a spousal meaning. And therefore, salvation, he says, is not only redemptive, but spousal. And I don't think we've even begun to scratch the surface of what it means to speak about redemption as spousal.
That's great. I would love to have you on again, just go more deeply into these topics. But Where can my listeners learn more about you, learn more about the Institute and the work you're doing in Phoenix?
Yes. So my personal website is simply my name. So it would be www.katrinazeno.com. So that's Katrina, like the hurricane, K-A-T-R-I-N-A, and then Zeno with a Z, Z-E-N-O. So zero, but with an N. So katrinazeno.com. I have a professional Facebook page that people can like. And it's TOB Speaker, so they can like TOB Speaker. I write a blog called TOB Tuesdays because it comes out on Tuesdays. And so at the moment, we're refreshing it, so we're reposting. I think I wrote 33 or 34 of them. And those are all posted on my diocesan website, which is www.tobcenter.org. And they can just click on the right hand side. There's a little thing that says TOB Tuesdays. And then I also have a YouTube channel. So if they just go on YouTube and again search on my name, Katrina Zeno, and look for my channel, because there'll be lots of things that come up. I mean, they can click on whatever they want. But you know, so on my channel I have a number of videos posted on various ranges and various topics. I also have some videos in Spanish, so a very basic theology of the body course in Spanish, because that's an area that I would love to see theology of the body expand into, although I don't do any more speaking on Spanish, but those videos are there. And I think that's it. I mean, and then just kind of general, you know, on the web, you know, different places have different articles and have videotaped me and posted them. I always say, if you just search on Katrina Zeno, you'll get more than you ever wanted, you know, on Google. So, but those would be kind of the top four: my personal website, my Facebook page, my TOB Tuesdays, and then the YouTube my YouTube channel.
Well, fantastic. Oh, thank
I'm sorry.
You.
And always my books. So Discovering the Feminine Genius. The books. Yeah. And The Body Reveals God. Those are also great, great places.
Great. Well, thank you. You've given us a lot to think about today a lot of great explanation. And I thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah. Thank you, William. It's been just a joy to be with you. Thank you.
Well, same here. And we'll have to do this again sometime to dig deeper.
Sounds great.
All right. God bless.
Thank you. God bless you.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by A few minutes each day can change your life during Lent. Ave Maria Press offers booklets for daily devotion, reflection, and more from such best-selling authors as Gary Zemak, Greg Kandra, Father Michael White, and Tom Corcoran, and so many more. Looking for Stations of the Cross booklets or books that are perfect for small groups? We have those too. Head over to AveMariaPress.com and use code LENT20 to get 20% off your order today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small-batch artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Breadbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.